Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So this evening I thought I would... Actually, I thought I wasn't going to give a talk tonight. Ajahn Yatiko was slated to give the talk, so he's not feeling well. But how did I give some reflections around precepts? This is one of the fundamentals of any religious teaching, spiritual path, the way that the Buddha approaches the practice of precepts is particularly useful. The emphasis is always how to use the precepts as a means of fulfilling the path. The practice is always an integrated way of living and relating to our actions of body, speech, and mind, in a way that is going to lead us to an experience of freedom from suffering. Cultivation of precepts is one of the tools that allows us to experience freedom from suffering. Perhaps a better way of, say, translating the word that's usually used as precepts is, say, virtue, virtuous conduct. In the scriptural language, sila is the word that is usually translated as virtue or precepts. But the way it's oftentimes described is that sila is that which lays the basis for that which is solid and weighty and gives a suitable foundation for oneself. That way, when we live in the world and engage in the world around us, we have this solid ballast and anchor, something that is can withstand the vagaries of change, the vagaries of the worldly conditions. It's an important quality to bring into our engaging in the world. Trying to get the world to comply to our preferences or our views and opinions or our wishes of how the world should be, well, it's hopeless, for one. If we wait for the world to conform to our wishes and our preferences, wait for that to happen before we experience well-being and happiness, then we've got a long wait. But we can put our attention on skillful action. We can put our attention on virtue and living in a way that is really harmless. Virtue performs a function of giving us a solid anchor for ourselves. When Ajahn Chah taught, oftentimes when people asked what he mostly taught and what themes did he emphasize over and over again, he would put a tremendous amount of attention on sila, on virtue, and right view, because those were a real but necessary aspect of foundations for the practice. One has to hold this cultivation of the precepts in an appropriate way. Ajahn Chah in particular, and I think Buddhist practice in general, he would always emphasize the need for using these precepts for, one, training ourselves, but the way we train ourselves is to understand our own volition, our own intentions, in order to really be free from suffering. We have to understand what kind of volitions we have in the mind, what kind of intentions, what kind of impulses are we wanting to act from, are we wanting to speak from, are we viewing the world around us with. As long as those intentions and volitions are not investigated and understood, then we spend our time just reacting to our internal impulses and the impingement that we receive from the world around us. To be able to have these certain boundaries and bases for our actions and speech are a way that we can be using the conduct to reflect back and mirror for ourselves what's the intention coming from, what's the impulse, what are we drawn towards, what are we reacting to. As we shine a light on those impulses and those volitions, then we can really start to recognize, are we contributing to increased sense of dukkha or of dissatisfaction, discontent? Are we able to contribute to our actions and speech in a way that increases a sense of well-being and inner harmony and balance? The Buddha is always using the template of learning, of educating ourselves. When we think of the word precepts, that is translated in English, the word that it comes from is sikha, or sikapada, sikapadam. Particularly, this word sikha means to learn, means to study, means to train. And education or learning, from the Buddha's perspective, is learning through doing. It's not a theoretical, just taking a theory or an idea, but you're taking our actual action and seeing, what is it? What's the result? What am I putting in? What am I receiving? How does it work? How does happiness work? How does suffering work? How does skillfulness work? How does unskillfulness work? What does good and bad actually mean? It's through the training and understanding arises through our engaging in this attention that we put onto our actions and speech. The Buddha is giving it as tools. And of course, it has an effect. You know, when we learn and pay attention, you realize that as we cultivate our skillful action and skillful speech, we ourselves experience a sense of well-being internally. When our engagement with the world around us is one that creates a quality of trust and of harmony, it's a direct correlation. And the Buddha speaks of the fruits of living with virtue. There's actually a discourse where a person can't remember, was it a Brahmin or I think it was some sort of general at the time of the Buddha, sort of military general, skeptical and wanting to know, well, why bother? And the Buddha saying, for one who's uncertain, then there's tangible benefits that you can see for yourself, and there's benefits that one can see for oneself in this present life, and then there are some that one needs to take on faith. One can see for oneself, one experiences a sense of confidence in one's own conduct. You don't have to experience a sense of remorse around one's actions. That's a benefit. Not to have to experience that sense of regret or remorse around, gee, I wish I hadn't have done that, I wish I hadn't have said that, why did I do that? Second-guessing oneself. One develops a clarity in one's engagement with the world so that one doesn't experience that quality of regret or remorse. And then Buddha says, and then others look on one in a way of with trust and confidence. They praise you. And that's not empty praise or an empty feeling. We all know what it's like when we have contact with somebody who is trustworthy and is benevolent. It's a very different feeling. So when we look at a person who really is virtuous, the Buddha was not just trying to get people to conform to a bunch of rules, but he's trying to get people to really live with these wholesome qualities, to really abide in that virtue which brightens the heart. The Buddha also saying that, you know, one of the benefits is one goes into any kind of assembly or gathering and one's not fearful. There is a sense of confidence and trust internally and externally. That's a benefit. One can see that for oneself. And the Buddha says one also dies unconfused, in the sense if one's ill or when approaching aging and death, one doesn't have a lot of confusion. It's just natural that one has settled all sorts of issues. And that's the function of virtue, is that, yeah, everything's settled. There's no conflict. There's no lingering results of one's actions and speech that are lingering in a way that are complicated. Everything's very straightforward. So one dies unconfused. And these are all, one can see this for oneself. And the last one, the Buddha says, is in that conversation with this general, is that after death, one goes to a place of well-being, a realm of well-being. The Buddha recognizes that that's just something you have to take on faith. These aspects of virtue, the Buddha is saying, yeah, there are these many, many benefits. What comes to mind in terms of a tangible benefit as an example is an example from the life of Master Su Yun, the great Chinese Chan master. He was somebody who had a tremendous meditation practice, but also his commitment to precepts and training was renowned. He did a lot of traveling. A lot of it was just walking. One of the things he was famous for was going across China, which is a long way, three steps and one bow. I can't remember how long it took him. It was years to fulfill that commitment. But one time he was, I imagine it was in his later life, which he had a lot of later life. He didn't die until he was 120. He was on a bus, and he didn't pass away until mid or late 1950s. So he lived in China during a time of great turmoil, civil war, and internal strife. The bus that he was traveling on was attacked by bandits, which was a reasonably common occurrence in those days. There was a lot of chaos during that time. The bandits got on the bus and they started taking all of the valuables from the passengers. Master Su Yun was sitting more toward the back, and they got to him, and they, of course, they were taken aback that there's this old, venerable monk. We're sort of, we're really sorry for. They're a bit embarrassed or ashamed, actually, and really sorry to be doing this, and we don't want to harm you, and we respect what you're doing, so we don't will hurt you at all or harm you, and we'll just leave you alone. So in that sense, we respect you as a Buddhist monk. And Master Hu Yun just said quietly to them, he said, if you really meant that, you'd give all of the what you've taken from other people, you'd just give it back to them. But just through the power of his virtue, I think they probably didn't even understand what was going on, they gave it all back, got off the bus and then left the bus to carry on. When you come into the sphere of influence of somebody who has been holding virtue, it has a tremendous effect. Also, or like Ajahn Chah, he had this tremendous commitment to virtue and goodness. At one point in his life, as he was starting to become more well-known and respected and gaining a larger and larger following, there was people who were upset at him and actually hired a hitman, a gunman, to shoot Ajahn Chah or to kill Ajahn Chah. And he went to the monastery and, well, he had to go to the monastery if he was going to scope it out and try to see how he's going to accomplish his, it was a job, by drawing close and checking Ajahn Chah's habits, his routine. He realized, I can't do this. He ended up one, sort of giving back the money that he'd been and told the people that he wouldn't be able to do it. And he ended up drawing close to Ajahn Chah, and then it was actually some years later, he actually ended up ordaining. He's a really sweet old guy. He came and he spent time at Wat Nanachat. He was a bit eccentric. He liked hanging around, being close to the Westerners. He's an interesting character. The accumulated virtue has an effect both on ourselves personally, but also on the world around us. Man, on a certain level, it's just quite mundane. Adhering to a standard of conduct of not taking the life of living creatures, not taking what isn't given, living in a way of integrity in terms of sexuality, holding to the commitment to truth and harmlessness in speech, and a commitment to awareness and a sobriety, not just not engaging in intoxicants, but that sense of, because all of it is again pointing to an internal virtue. So those virtues of honesty and integrity and a clarity of being, are qualities that they lead us to the experience of well-being and freedom from suffering. It's quite natural. So internally, that commitment to virtue, the experience is one of brightness and happiness. When the Buddha speaks about the cultivation of virtue for somebody who is intent on entering the stream of Dhamma, there's an idiom that he uses, that commitment to those virtues that are praised by the wise and conducive to concentration. Enlightened beings, wise beings, that's what they see as fundamental to a skillful life. Inherently, that commitment to virtue leads to a sense of stability of mind and concentration, to samadhi. When I was in the car today, we were talking about Ajahn Chah's instructions in meditation. And sometimes, particularly for us as Westerners living close to him, his instructions in meditation could be really frustrating, because he didn't really see it as anything difficult. You sit down, you cross the legs, sit up straight, be alert, and watch the breath until the mind becomes peaceful and the breath stops. This is sort of, I mean, what's the big deal? You know, a lot of that stillness and steadiness of mind arises from the precondition of that commitment to virtue. It's a natural result. If we want our meditation to really grow, if we want our hearts to be really still, the supportive conditions are important to be cultivating. The Buddha also speaks of virtue. One of the ways that he speaks of the keeping of the five precepts is he speaks of it. He said there are these five great gifts, because it's universally accepted that generosity and giving is a good thing. But then the Buddha uses that commitment to precepts and virtuous conduct with the five precepts as these are the five great gifts: refraining from taking the life of any living creature, refraining from taking what isn't given, refraining from sexual misconduct, saying that these are the ways that we give the gift of security and trust and well-being and happiness. When we live in that way, it is a gift to the world around us that benefits the world. It's a gift of non-harming and gift of security, to live without fear. So much of the experience of the human condition on many levels, it's not that different from the animal realm. And we have bodies that are subject to discomfort, pain, suffering, sickness, death. That's an insecure position, to be able to live in the presence of those who we can feel a sense of security and trust and a lack of fearfulness. There's a tremendous sense of well-being. That's a gift that we can be giving, and particularly as we live together and being able to communicate and interact in ways that other people don't have to feel a sense of fear or insecurity or suspicion in any way. So it's a tremendous gift. The way that the Buddha laid out his teaching, this training in conduct, our actions of body and speech, these precepts, they form a solid and stable foundation for our cultivation to grow on. It's just a very practical tool. It doesn't come from a sense of, say, moralistic, the Buddha sort of there wagging his finger, you got to do this and you got to do that and you can't do that. And it's sort of like, if you want to be happy, this is a way to do it. If you want to be peaceful, this is a good foundation to start to build from. This is a stepping stone or a basis of ongoing training for ourselves. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening. Annamayam Dhammagataya Sadhu Karam Dhammase Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu.